special ASIS 2017 SecurityExpo.org edition with my very special guest, Mr. Scott Klosowski of Future Point of View. That's FPOV.com. And Scott is the ASIS 2017 keynote speaker for Tuesday, right, Scott?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show. Glad to have you on. This is going to be a really cool conversation. We just did a little pre-show conversation. We have a lot of really interesting things to talk about. But first, let's do our housekeeping. Now, remember, everybody, this is for the upcoming ASIS International Security Expo. That's securityexpo.org. And that's taking place this year, September 25th to the 28th in Dallas, Texas. And remember, you actually can come in on September 24th for the big Sunday Texas night show. It's also taking place the day before that. So, Mr. Scott, let's get right into this. We have some. Oops! No, that's the wrong graphic. let's go back.
Nope, there you are, great Scott. Picture of you, though.
Yeah, I like my green
great,
screen.
Great picture. Yeah, you were looking good, Chuck.
All right, there I am. I'm back with a little Hollywood sign. Okay, now you are a futurist. I'm very intrigued by that. Tell us what that means and what you do.
Well, we should put some boundaries around that, because when people say futurist, a lot of people think somebody that's thinking out 10, 20 years into the future. Sure, I have opinions about that, but to be honest, we really work in kind of the 3 to 5 year time frame. So we're trying to figure out what is coming in the future 3 to 5 years that we should be investing in now. So what would be critical today to understand so that we're going to be relevant in that 3 to 5 year window?
Now, tell me about your background and you know, how you got into this, and what are you really passionate about in this field?
Well, I've been in technology since I was 18 years old, so over 30 years. So I'm self-taught. I taught myself how to program when PCs were brand new. You know, I was writing code when a virus meant you were passing something around on a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive. And so, you know, I've been involved in technology all this time, but all along the way, I've been really intrigued by people who try to do something with the technology that is evil, right, or unhealthy. And so that's the interesting thing when you get to be kind of my age as a technologist. You know, I've seen 30 something years of people trying to do something to other people's technology that they shouldn't be doing. And so so all of this time, I have stayed very current with what's going on in what we now call security or cybersecurity. So and the reason that I have been so intrigued by that, I suppose, is I'm very passionate about the intersection of humanity and technology. So what is technology's impact on society, and what's technology's impact on the economy? And so because I'm interested in that, not just in jihadi architect technology, then I've always been interested in kind of the good and the evil of how people are using technology. And so that has put me squarely in the crosshairs of trying to understand, you know, how do you stop the people that want to do something unethical or evil with technology? And how do you amplify the people that want to do something good with technology?
Well, this is a brilliant point. I think about this stuff all the time, because there's an intersection between, in fact, what's the name of your lecture given? Technology in the Integration of Man, right? I mean, that's what you're lecturing on, I think.
Right. That's the title of the keynote. I'll be doing some plenary sessions too, you know, that are more practical. But the plenary session is the Technology Integration of Man. And so, you know, it is where I'll talk about the growing, what we call humology, right? The integration of humans and technology to get work done or to get a process done. And so, you know, that whole field of humology is a field we spend a bunch of time in.
Well, I think this really hits at home for a lot of people. And before the show, we were talking about the intersection between physical security and cybersecurity. And back in the day, I used to tell people that cybersecurity now owns that word. And this is, I don't know, they've owned it for about 10 years, right? So now you have to type in physical security if you want to learn about doors and locks and things like that. However, doors, locks, access control, it's all the Internet of Things now. And if the physical security don't people don't get on board and say, listen, I am part of cybersecurity. It's all one type of new security now. I think we're going to have some problems. I'm glad to hear it is merging that way. But discuss that intersection between the physical people and the cyber people in security. And where do you see the future of that going?
Well, first of all, as we were talking, as you said, pre-show, I mean, it might be important for people to understand that I own part of a cybersecurity firm where we have hundreds of physical security experts, and then we have cybersecurity experts as well. So, you know, it's a daily occurrence for me that there is this combination of those two skills. And so when you say, you know, where is it going to go, I see that there will be such a heavy amount of integration that I don't know that we will have to say cybersecurity or physical security anymore. You know, I think there will come a time where we'll just think of it as security. In other words, you won't be able to protect a building, or you won't be able to protect a person without using some amount of technology to do that, or to understand how technology is going to be used to penetrate whatever you're trying to protect. But I think it's the same thing on the other side. You know, today when we talk about cybersecurity, for years that's been thought of as, hey, don't let somebody break into your network. So in other words, guard the perimeter of your network. Whereas today, you know, we know that more and more, if somebody wants to get into a network, they might breach the building and stick a USB drive in the network or do some form of that, which is a physical attack. More and more we're seeing, let's say, organized crime that will offer a bounty to buy people's passwords. And so that's not traditional cybersecurity, right? I mean, that's what you wanted physical security to deal with before, was this human issue. But I just see that in the future, there'll be such an integration that I think maybe someday we can stop breaking it up into, well, there's cybersecurity, there's physical, there's electronic. We'll stop putting words in front of it. We'll just say there's just security.
Well, you know, what I find ironic is that there's this complexity now that the Internet of Things and devices bring to our security resources. That's complex. However, security is treated as not complex. So when you have bring your own device, and now since I'm an employer and I can't afford to buy everybody a smartphone, well, I guess NYPD can. They just dumped 34,000 the other day because they're on an old Windows platform. But when you bring your own device, people do not treat their phone as part of their employer's network. So our networks are complex behind the scenes, but they function as simple, easy to use. Hey, this is a necessity. I got to check my bank records. I got to check everything. And I don't think the end users are viewing this from a point of view that cell phone, that internet device is now part of a greater network. And I'm not sure how we get that through to people.
All right. So, Chuck, this is right down my alley in that it's even a bigger question. It's not just people hooking their devices to a network. It's people allowing their credit card information to be stolen. You know, I mean, how do you make somebody care to not put their credit card in a skimmer? And here's the reality. Today, when somebody makes a mistake, there's usually no consequences to them. So let's look at those two different scenarios. If you stick your credit card in a skimmer, lose your information, and somebody charges $3,000 on your card, you pay nothing. There's no consequences to you today. If you take your mobile device, you have an old Android platform, and the Android platform's not secure, and you hook it to the company network and you cause a problem, the odds are you're not going to get fired. In fact, at a lot of companies, HR might not even come talk to you. And so we live in a world where there really aren't any consequences to individuals today, but I really believe that's going to change. So I think that there will someday be a copay where when your credit card's defrauded, you're going to have to pay 20% of that. I think companies are going to put in rules that when you're the one that allows a virus to get into the company, it grounds for termination. So I think as we mature, then there will be consequences, and then people will actually care about these things. But we have to be honest right now that there's almost no consequences to dumb users. And so so when a user does something stupid, they don't pay a price.
That's an excellent point. To that note, how would you recommend organizations manage their overall risk level and policy for this sort of security challenge? Because it's really, it's almost unmanageable. To your point, do you write your employee up because he used his own phone to do something, when maybe that policy should have been on you to make sure he's using his own properly? It's a difficult position for management to be in.
I just don't think it's that difficult, Chuck, to be honest. I think this is a maturity issue. I think that this is also new that, you know, we typically have 50, 60-year-old leaders who are not familiar with any of this. And so it seems difficult to them. You know, it's very clear to me that the way we're going to stop this is, we'll put better software in place to be able to be a filter between users' devices and the network. I think we'll do better training. Right now, we're not very good at user training. And then user testing needs to get a lot better. And then after you've got better better platforms in place, you got better testing, better training, after that, you have to have a model that's like a three strikes, you're out model, right? So one time we notify you that you did something that caused a problem. Second time, you're going to talk to HR, and they're going to tell you that if there's a third strike, you're going to be fired. Third time you do it, you get fired. I mean, there just has to be a set of rules like that. And that seems, today, that seems harsh to our current leaders. I just don't think it's going to seem as harsh in the future, because the consequences of bad behavior are going to be so high that future leadership is going to say, hey, three strikes, you're out. Sounds good to me. And once people see other people around them get fired for clicking on a link they shouldn't have clicked on, or for connecting a device they shouldn't have connected, then the world will change. People will realize you have to take some responsibility for doing the right thing.
Well, you may have noticed my white hair, all right? I get your comment about the 40 or 50-year-olds. These are the people in leadership positions. These are not my friends at police departments that are captains and chiefs. They're my friends at corporations that are senior vice president level and C-level. And they didn't have a computer in 1984 like I did, or you did, when you're writing code when you're a kid. And they don't get the history of these devices and how this thing works. And I don't see them making the proper management decisions like you're talking about right here, not because they're not competent or any of those things. It's they don't get it. They don't know the difference between the PSI and your golf cart tires and your ISP. Are you finding that the C-level people, the decision makers, are starting to get it? Where on that spectrum of getting it and not getting it, are they? Are they halfway there?
I think they're part of the way there. You know, I don't know that I could say they're halfway there. I think as there are more and more articles about bad things that have happened to companies, as you have board of directors taking more responsibility now to set risk levels.
Right.
You know, and it's a maturity thing. And so we're on a continuum, a maturity continuum. And I wouldn't say maybe we're halfway there. I might say we're 30 or 40% of the way there at max. I'm not kidding you. Almost every day I have to be involved in some meeting with a C-suite executive around cybersecurity or security, where I just marvel at the immaturity of some of the decisions that they're making. And there's just still way too much Pollyanna, you know, thinking, well, it's not going to happen to me.
Right.
Or it's the people who something already bad happened, and now they're in a reactive way trying to fix it all. And I still am surprised that you know, leaders of really big organizations at times who haven't had disastrous events happen to them seem to think that it's probably not going to happen to me. So they'll invest a little bit, but they really don't commit fully to offsetting the risk that they should.
So as a technologist, how have you seen the integration of the security space evolving? How is that going? Are we evolving into a good place, or a place you just discussed, which is, you know, the technology is getting ahead of the decision makers and their ability to control it?
I think the tools are evolving pretty well. And so I've been happy with, the evolution of some of the tools that we have. I would argue and debate that we haven't moved fast enough to replace passwords, and that's such a critical piece of the puzzle. And we could have and should have been smarter and replaced passwords, a few years ago. But generally, I like what I'm seeing as far as the tools are concerned. As far as the security industry, one of my biggest concerns is that we are not working well enough at the executive level. So, are we having the right kind of influence on a board of directors? Are we having the right kind of influence on the C-suite? And I think that's a bit of a perennial problem. It is, I'll ask, for instance, to CISOs, do you present to the board? How often do you present to the board? What are you presenting to the board? And rarely do I have a security officer who is really presenting a very good PowerPoint to the board that helps them understand what are the risks, what are our weaknesses, what are the investments to try to offset the risks, what kind of insurance do we have put in place. So, in other words, really painting a true picture of what is a risk analysis that the board needs to see. And so I think we still have a ways to go. Feeling comfortable presenting to executives or boards in a way where they understand what we're saying and we reduce the complexity that you mentioned for them.
Well, that's very interesting. I used to speak about these things at the studios back in the 90s when the internet was just, in infancy. And I would say, let's check that guy's hard drive and do forensics on it. And people would say, forensic? What are you talking about? We had a case at Fox where a guy was reprogramming DirecTV smart cards. And so he'd sell them for $100 on Yahoo auctions back in the day. And then you could plug that into your box at home and get free DirecTV forever. So we did forensics on his hard drive, found out all this stuff about him, but the legal department had not caught up with the ability to present that in a legal, I don't know, legal point of view or evidence. Just because I did a forensic and said he deleted it off his hard drive doesn't mean he did. Now, of course, we're way past that now, but you did have to boil this down to something very basic and simple. I'm still surprised by your statement, and I believe you, by the way, that the CISOs aren't getting FaceTime with the other C-level executives to explain this kind of stuff. This is critical. And if we don't do that, we're in for a big fail, a big giant fail, as my kids say. And I'm concerned about that. What can we do? Is it that the CISO, I don't know, are the CISOs younger and they're afraid of the guys with the white hair? I mean, what do you think is going on there socially? It's very strange to me.
Well, there's two issues. I mean, one issue is you have to get the airtime, right? I mean, is so you have to be invited, or you have to get yourself invited to be involved with the executive team or to be involved with the board. And at times now, I will have a CISO that says, "Hey, yeah, I got 15 minutes, at the last board meeting." The second piece, once you're invited, is what do you say? And that's the piece that bothers me more right now is a lot of times when you have that 15 or 20 minutes, I'm not finding that the data, the information that you're presenting and the way that people are presenting it is influential to the board. And so if you just present information or make a request and you're not influential, well, then you're wasting your time. So, when you ask a question, how can we improve that? The first thing is we have to be invited, right? It has to be every 6 months I'm in front of the board and I'm giving a risk analysis, a current risk analysis, and I'm informing and educating them on what our biggest risks are right now and what are we doing to remediate the risks. The second thing we have to get much better at is when you got 15 or 20 minutes, what do you present? How do you present it? What is it that the board needs to understand? What is your action item that you're asking them to do? Are you clearly shifting the risk responsibility to them? Because I don't want the risk responsibility to be with the security people. It's not our job to decide how much risk the organization should be taking. That is the board's job or the executive or the owner's job. They decide the level of risk. And today, I just think we need to get much better at doing that risk shifting, that shifting to say, look, you're the board. We could be completely protected. It's going to cost a lot of money. But if you want that kind of safety, we can do that. Or we can accept 80% risk. And here's how much 80% risk would cost. So I think we have to get much better at having those kinds of conversations with the board.
Well, I think that's fascinating because a CISO, Chief Information Security Officer, is a C-level executive. And I've heard this from many CISOs. They are not in the other C-level club, right? They're not the CEO, CI, CSO. That's a different group. That's the old school C-level. You new CISO guys, we'll call you when we need you. And that makes me a little worried.
Right.
That bothers me a little bit that they're still kind of kept off or as the, you know, the visiting stepchild or something like that. Now, to that point, there's a lot of things to worry about. And every time I do an interview, I say, you know what? I feel better or worse than when I woke up this morning. I'm going to go speaking to Scott that I feel a little worse because we're not where Scott thinks we should be. And I agree with everything you're saying there. But to that point, what keeps you up at night? What do you worry about the most in the cyber world?
You know, I there was a speech at the, you mentioned the Black Hat Conference and also DEF CON. There was a speech given where the keynoter made the comment that his concern is that in the security space, we're not doing the basics well enough. That what's becoming cool is to try to solve problems that don't even exist yet, or to try to show that you could hack into a voting machine, so it's become the flashy things that the industry wants to focus on. When it's the basic things of how are you doing your employee training? How are you doing your employee testing? You know, what's your network configuration model? What's your governance model? The thing that keeps me up at night is we need to do the blocking and tackling well in security. And I just think that there's been a movement the last couple years to really do the sexy things or to do the things that are really eye-catching. Like, I think it's fantastic when somebody hacks into a vehicle and shows that you can hack into a vehicle. But when that gets 90% of the airplay and only 10% of the airplay goes to social engineering and how do you stop your employees from being social engineered, I'm much more worried about social engineering, than I am worried about a car getting hacked into. Not that that's not important. So what keeps me up at night is, as an industry, I think we are getting away from focusing on the basics at times to focus on the spectacular things. And that isn't going to help us protect the world more. If we want to help protect the world, we need to focus more on the basic things.
Excellent points. Now, Scott, remember, we're going to do a little more housekeeping here. Scott is a keynote speaker on Tuesday at the ASIS International Conference, and you can get more information about that by going to www.securityexpo.org. And, of course, that will take place this year in Dallas, Texas. That's on September 25th to the 28th. But, of course, on the 24th, you can attend the ASIS Texas Night Party the Sunday before that. So let's make sure I push the right graphic here, Scott, to get you back on the air so I don't do that incorrectly. Give us a quick closeout of what you think the next 5 years is going to look like in security. I think people are very interested in that.
I think the amount of successful attacks is going to increase. I think that the complexity of what we're building into technology today is outpacing our ability to secure things. And so for the next 5 years, I see that it's going to progressively be more of a problem. I don't see on the five-year horizon a lot of magical new patents, right, or magical new technology that's going to help the world be a more secure place. I see that there will be more corporate awareness. I think there will be more C-suite and board-level awareness. And so I think more money will get invested in securing things in companies. It just will not be able to outpace the cleverness or the volume of attacks coming from organized crime, or coming from nation states. I think organized crime as a perpetrator, they're going to be the worst. And so I think over the next 5 years, it's going to be clear that you're not, in the U.S., for instance, we don't need to be as worried about Russia or China. We need to be worried about organized crime. Those are the things I look at. And I can give you tons of details about the Internet of Things or devices or smart products and, autonomous vehicles and everything that's going to happen with those. But I would just say in general, I think we have to understand that the pace of technology change is going to go so fast that there's going to be such increasing complexity that we will not be able to secure things well. And so we'll continue to see a growth in attacks over the next 5 years. I do think it'll level off and go backwards after that. but you only asked me the first 5-year horizon.
Scott Klosowski, ASIS 2017 keynote speaker. That's Tuesday on at 8:30 a.m. at ASIS 2017. Author, futurist, founder of Future Point of View, FPOV.com. Scott, thanks so much for coming on the show. And stop by the As Is Hub if you got some time, and we can chat because we're doing a live broadcast from there as well. Thanks for coming on Security Guy TV, and fascinating conversation. I really appreciate it.
Hey, glad to do it, Chuck. Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody's turning to securityguytv.com at your earliest convenience for the next special update with ASIS 2017.